Hello and welcome to Animal Voices. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm a little sick today, so my voice is more husky than usual. I'm your host, Lauren Corman, here with Lamia Gibson, teching for us today. This is her final program.
It's the last time with your husky voice.
You are the queen of husky voices.
I just did that just for that.
We get a lot of comments, actually, about your voice. We have over the years. So I'll just give you a quick rundown of the program today. We are going to be interviewing the vice president of the Animal Protection Society of Turkey, and I'm really excited to talk with her. We haven't talked about animals in Turkey, and we haven't talked about the kind of shelter system that exists there and what people are doing to help animals in that country. So I'm very excited to speak with her today. And then for the second half of the program, we're going to do a bit of a retrospective with Lamia and play some clips from, I know, some of her favorite shows, as well as some things that I pulled out a show that actually she didn't tech, but I think she'll enjoy. So we're going to do that at the halfway point during the program, but we're going to take a short musical break, come back, and we will find out more about the situation for animals in Turkey. Please stay tuned. Hello and welcome back to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. Today on Animal Voices, we are going to be speaking with the Vice President of the Animal Protection Society of Turkey, Gamze Erkaknir. If I've mispronounced her name, I'm hoping that she will correct me. Before we jump into that interview, I'd like to let people know that if you want to write us with any questions or comments for the program, you can write us at animalvoices@gmail.com. Animal Voices is all one word. And our website is animalvoices.ca. All of our archive programs are available for free download at that site. So, I will now turn to our interview with Gamze. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, and it was so wonderful to start with the Turkish music.
That was Lamia's choice.
And good morning to all of you.
Good morning to you, too. Did I say your name correctly?
Yes, it is Gamze.
Wonderful. So maybe we can start off. There's so many different things to talk about. We only have about 20 more minutes left. So we'll have to move quickly through some of these questions. But
okay.
I'm thrilled that you're on the program today. And I was wondering if we could start off with just finding out a bit more about who you are and your background.
Okay. Well, I was born and raised as a single child in Ankara, Turkey. And I was blessed to have such parents who really cared about not only animals, but with every kind of living things. I mean, I remember my childhood, my parents always welcomed adopted children, paralyzed elderly people, animals in need. And after I became an architect and I opened up my own business 25 years ago, I started serving as the vice president of High Court and started to help financially to the organization. And today I'm just following the footsteps of my mother and my father, and still we have a devoted, dedicated life to animals.
And so your parents are the ones who created High Court?
No, in fact, well, Turkey has a very interesting point in animal welfare, because first animal protection association of the world was established in Turkey. It was Ottoman Empire time, of course, in 1453, after Constantinople was taken over. And since that time, Turks always had animal welfare foundations. In fact, in those times, in Istanbul, in every street, there were water fountains and there were food stations for stray animals. And when the First World War started, of course, besides everything, these foundations were destroyed too. And High Court was established in 1955. It was in Atatürk's will. Atatürk, you know, he's the founder of the modern Turkish Republic. And my father and my mother got involved with High Court 37 years ago, it's interesting, too, because in those times we didn't even know about this organization. And we were a normal family with one dog. We were planning to go to United States for my summer vacation. And we were looking for a place to border our dog. And my father found about this shelter, which had a terrible fire in those times. And hundreds of animals were burned in that fire. He came home, said that, well, we will not be able to make this vacation because I donated all our trip money to these animals, which only 50 of them were left, and they were in a terrible, terrible situation. And it was the day we got involved. After that day, there were no vacations ever. And since 37 years, my father passed away 10 years ago. And my mother is still every day, she goes to shelter, she's 77 years old, makes sure that she cooks for those animals, they are all fine. And there had not been one day that she didn't go since 37 years she's with animals.
Wow. That sounds like a lot of work.
Oh, it is. It is not easy. And since 3.5 years I'm in the States, in Ankara, I had my architectural office, but the income was not being able to support the shelter because I could, even though it was established by government, it was established by the president of that time, it doesn't get any funds from government. And donations are never enough because of the economical situation of Turkey. I can say that as a family, we are supplying the 90% of the expenses. And my income was not enough in Turkey. And here in the States, I opened up two shops where I sell Turkish imports. And whatever I make, I try to send and make sure we just can get our organization and shelter going.
On the website, it indicates that you have about 600 animals at the shelter right now. So, of course, this is, you know, in addition to running the organization in general and the shelter, I mean, just caring for those animals must be quite expensive. I suppose this is where most of the money is going at this point.
In fact, it is not that expensive because our monthly expenses are around $5,000. Comparing, I'm looking at the American shelters and, of course, comparing it with them. We are trying to be as economical as possible. Mm. For instance, we have like 12 people working all volunteer. We are paying only for one worker and one driver. And none of us ever get any salaries or, all the work we put in is voluntarily. Also, we cannot afford dry food. My mother is cooking for 600 animals. And we are trying to get the scraps from the hospitals, from the big hotels every day. Drivers picking those up. And our expenses, I can say that it's $5,000 per month, which is not much.
Mm. So what types of animals do you have at the shelter right now, and what kind of situations are they coming from?
As High Court, we do not believe in locking every animal we see. We believe that every animal, if it is a pet, should have a home. Therefore, adoption is something very important, which we encourage. Also, we are lucky in Turkey because we could, during the years as High Court, we could educate the authorities and municipalities that if we have a very big stray animal problem, but if these animals are spayed, neutered, vaccinated, and registered, as community cats, community dogs, municipalities are allowing them to be out on the streets. And there are so many animal lovers who are really taking care of these animals, making sure that they are getting fed and watered. And if they have a traffic accident, if they are abused, those are the kind of animals which we are accepting to our sanctuary. Mostly, we accept all kinds of animals. We have right now over 400 dogs, about 150 cats. We have a fractured leg horse, which heals and very happy. We have a bear, a brown bear. We have turtles, we have falcons, and those are the animals which are not able to survive by themselves out in the nature or in their habitat, or they are neglected, or they are not able, they are not capable of getting adopted. Mm. And mostly we are making sure that we do not just pick up any animal we see. And we are definitely a no-kill shelter. And we do not believe in euthanizing animals just because they are overpopulated, or saying that we can't afford it or it's too expensive. No, I mean, we never hide behind these excuses. And every animal, as long as it's not suffering, we give them a chance for them to live until the end of their natural life.
Are there other shelters in Turkey as well, or is HECAD sort of doing most of the work at this point?
Yes, there are almost 15 more shelters all over Turkey, but they are all municipality shelters. Municipalities supporting them financially, and different from HECAD, they pick up any stray animal in those shelters. And that's something which we are not really encouraging, because municipalities, most of the municipalities in Turkey are allowing them to be free out on the street as community dogs or community cats. They shouldn't be just locked into cages, and their adoption chances are lower, of course, as they are not high-quality breeded animals. But we are also, as HECAD, inspecting those municipality shelters, making sure that they have a quality of life.
Mm. Have people criticized HECAD for not taking in more animals, that they would say that maybe it's better to be, you know, locked up in a cage than to be out on the street or possibly hit by a vehicle again? Have you, has the organization and the shelter been criticized at all?
Of course, everybody wants every animal to be in the shelter, thinking that they are happier there, they are being taken care better there. And you are very right. I mean, all these animals out on the streets end up having a traffic accident. And all those animals are coming back to shelter. And it's kind of like an endless circulation which we are going through. Putting a healthy animal out on the streets is not a solution.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing is always every animal should have a home. I don't believe in anything being stray, you know. I mean, even a plant, if you don't take care of it, it dies or something happens to it. But unfortunately, we do not have more. Our capacity is for 600 animals. Therefore, this staying neutering programs are very, very important for us. And we are lucky in Turkey because all the vets give free service for that.
And there's also medical services that HECAD provides as well.
Yes, we do. Uh-huh. In our sanctuary, it's like a rehabilitation center too. Any injured animal or any aggressive animal, we rehab them and then we rehome them. Any animal which comes to HECAD never goes out on the street. Either we keep them there till the end of their life, or first things first, we find to rehome them. And we are, again, very lucky. The university veterinary hospital, most of the private vets, they do not charge any money, only the medication. Or if they have to put some kind of devices during these operations, that's what we have to pay. But they never, ever charge us for their workmanship.
Mm. So, of course, there's spay and neutering, and there's medical treatment that needs to be administered after an animal has had an accident. But is there also, how widespread is abuse and neglect of animals in Turkey at this point? Are you seeing a lot of animals that are coming to the shelter because they have been intentionally abused?
Well, unfortunately, I mean, it is not only in Turkey, but it is in all over the world. Bad animal treatment or laws, they don't work properly, or neglected animals are not a country-specified problems, but rather universal problems. Mm-hmm. And why animals are mistreated? Well, no one in the world has found an answer to that question. But mainly, either it is ignorance, or either somebody has to be a psychopath, or selfishness, or because of some money concerns, I believe the animals are being mistreated. In general, in Turkey, again, we are lucky because of the beliefs people have this thing that mistreating an animal is a sin. Therefore, I mean, we are using that a lot in our education programs too. And at least, I mean, they have that fear that, oh, if I do something bad to an animal, I'm going to go to hell. Mm. And we use that a lot. People usually do not hurt an animal on purpose. But, of course, I can't say that no, I mean, it's a paradise, such a thing doesn't happen. There are individual cases, and in such cases, we immediately, either High Court or our other organizations, which we are, work together, they immediately adopt that animal, treat that animal. And since 3 years, we have the animal rights law, which HICO prepared with government, and it passed in 2004. According to that, we make sure that person gets punished. Our main problem recently is the gypsy horses in Turkey, which are a lot. I mean, we have almost like 10,000 horses which are being mistreated. Before we had dancing bear problems, which we solved. Now it is forbidden. We do not have those dancing brown bears anymore. As long as, I mean, we work hard on this gypsy horses problems, I believe we will get a good solution about that too.
Can you tell us more about the law that you mentioned that should be, you know, be able to protect animals better?
Sure.
What is that law about, and do you think that it will actually work, or has it been working?
Okay, that law, I'm very proud of that law. I mean, of course, what we tried to pass was 100% perfect. And in fact, a German friend of mine said that if this was not animals' rights law, but human rights law, he said this would be the best law of the world. Mm-hmm. Government, of course, didn't accept 100% of our proposal, but I can say 80% of it is accepted. For instance, I can say that it is the only law in the world which gives rights to stray animals. That's something great because, as far as I know, in the world, stray animals have no chance to live. They are expendable and they have to be destroyed. Also, it is very new. Right now, it is not working perfect. Right now, the system did not totally absorb it, which is very normal. Every law is like that when it's new. But I believe that it will be working perfect and it needs some time. Government is very cooperative with us. For instance, if we file a complaint to police, police may not know the little hidden writings of the law. But when we remind them, they immediately do whatever is necessary. And Turkey's animal rights law I can say that it is much better than any law in the world today.
So it protects them for, what exactly does the law protect them from?
Okay, the main structure of it is every animal has right to live. And it must not be abused, it must not be neglected, it must not be abandoned. And of course there are punishments according to these sections of it. All the stray animals has to be neutered, safe, vaccinated, marked, and either they have to be kept in the shelters or they have to be released. And they, I mean, every authority, municipality authority has to follow up as with these registered animals, which is something great. And other than that, it is so much in details, of course. I mean, every single thing you can think of, how much weight can a horse can carry, or what should be their conditions when we keep them in the shelters or even in our houses, how to transport an animal. Everything you can think of, we thought of those. It took us 14 years to prepare this proposal.
It sounds like a great accomplishment.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is something which makes me very proud, and I can say that this law is the best I could ever did.
I would like to hear more about how people have responded to Haikad, and what you think needs to be done now. You know, you mentioned this law. It sounds like it's just been a fantastic initiative. There's still some problems around enforcement, but you feel like that it's getting there. What else do you think needs to be done right now to improve the situation for animals? What else would you like to see happen?
I can say that as Haikad is the oldest and as we have the most experience about the animal issues in Turkey, not only in Turkey, in fact, we are related internationally to with all kinds of animal matters. For instance, on the 13th of February, we are organizing a very large international protest against China, how they are skinning the dogs alive and boiling the cats alive, and in front of the Chinese embassies all over the world, and in Turkey it will take place in Ankara and in Istanbul. We are involved with every kind of problem which takes place all over the world. Sometimes we put our noses into Canadian seals. And what needs to be done is we need financial support. I believe that, I mean, I have the confidence that if instead of volunteers, if we had like 10 paid professional staff in Turkey, animal issues not only in Turkey but in all over the world could be solved much better. Right now, Haikad in Turkey is like the leader in knowledge and in experience. And Ministry of Environment, Ministry of Agriculture, Ministry of Health asked Haikad's opinion in so many issues which they cannot decide by themselves. All the other organizations, all the municipality shelters, they ask for our opinion. And we want to be a sample. I mean, our shelter in Turkey, I can say that it is the largest shelter of Europe, maybe even in the world. I don't know, in America, best friends can be larger than us. But we are the we are a very, very large capacity no-kill shelter. And it is very tragic, I mean, being this shelter to be run with a 77-year-old woman and with one worker and not having heating system for animals, not having dry food, and everything is being cooked. And so these animals are all healthy and happy, and they exercise, and they live happily there. If we had more support financially, I believe that we are capable of creating more miracles.
This is probably a good time now for maybe if you could give us the website of the shelter.
Oh,
the organization.
Yes. I will allow everybody to come and visit our website. It is www.haykot.org, haykot.org. And our website has been prepared by volunteers, so we couldn't afford to pay a professional webmaster, but it became a real nice, real large website, and everybody is welcome to come and visit us.
Okay, I mean, there's a lot of information, and one of the things that I really appreciated about the website, too, is that there's a lot of pictures of the shelter and of different animals who have been rescued and rehabilitated there as well. I wanted to ask a quick question, too, before we're getting towards the end of the program, but I wanted to ask you about animals on farms, because we've been talking a lot about stray animals and cats and dogs, and you had mentioned the protest against China, which, you know, people focus on, of course, the cats and dogs there, and I'm wondering about animals on farms, though, in laboratories. These are sort of main issues that in North America the animal rights movement has focused on. Are those issues sort of coming to the fore too in Turkey as well?
Thank you very much for asking me this question, because this is one of our main issues. We are trying so hard to prevent the practice of factory farming from invading Turkey. The barbaric practice of factory farming in the world must be stopped. And as High Court, we cannot understand how the world permits the practice of factory farming to feed the ever-increasing human population of the world. And in Turkey, Ministry of Agriculture is on our side on this. And in Istanbul and in Izmir, we have these big factory farmings, which we send our volunteers as inspectors. Experimental animals is another main issue of High Court, and we have two volunteer groups, and each group contains 10 people. And these groups inspect the experimental laboratories, hospitals, clinics, and we encourage them changing it into alternative systems. And we have a lot of knowledge or information we try to gather and present to the experimental laboratories, and we are getting real good results recently.
Wonderful. We're just about to end our interview, but I wanted to end, if possible, with at least one story about an animal that you got to interact with through the shelter, or a story of one of the animals that has been particularly moving for you over the years.
Sure. There are so many stories, but I can tell you that since I have been involved with animals, I mean, since my childhood, I can say that I learned how to become a nice human being from animals. As I observe their loyalty, their love, their appreciation they give to us, I remember a very, very sad story. A dog was brought to our shelter, saying that it was a little terrier dog. They said that, well, we have twins now. Our doctor said that we shouldn't have any pets in the house, and we want to get rid of this dog. And we had to accept him. He quit eating and drinking. After the third day, our vet said that this dog is under very, very big depression, and he started giving IV to the dog. And in the fifth day, the dog's both eyes got blind. He refused to eat, he refused to drink, he refused to take any kind of treatment. And we were begging the owners to come and visit this dog or let us bring the dog to you. They refused this. And at the end, he committed suicide. And it is such a sad experience I went through. Later on, I saw cases like that. But just giving up on his life for the people whom he loved that much, but he was not loved as much. It was very sad. I always remember the loyalty and love of that dog.
So that one in particular stands out for you?
Yeah.
There's the story, too, of Ping and Pong on the website.
Pong is that story, too. They were experimental animals, and their front legs were cut and transplanted from each other. Of course, it didn't work out somehow, and they were dumped in our yard with the bandages on and everything. I mean, it was a terrible, terrible scene. First, we couldn't understand what was wrong with them, and then immediately we rushed to the vet, and our vet said, oh, my God, I mean, what is this? This is an unnecessary experiment they did on them. And then they lived for years together with us, and nobody adopted them as they didn't have one of their front legs. Pink didn't have the right leg. Pong didn't have the left leg. And whenever we have guests in the shelter, everybody pets them like them, but nobody adopted them. And their wish was always to have a home. And unfortunately, I mean, a couple of years ago, they completed their natural lifetime and they passed away. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we have so many stories like that in our website too, in haiku.org. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a wonderful. I mean, the pictures of them, they look pretty happy at that shelter.
Yes, yes. So we make sure that they become happy in there, because I see them as prisoners who have no fault, who didn't do a crime, but they are just locked there because of human beings. And I believe that they deserve to be happy. Of course, a jail, I mean, how much can it be happy? But we are trying to give the best of our love or of their needs. And as far as we have money, we make sure that they have the best.
Great. Thank you so much, Gamzee, for being on the program today.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure for me.
Oh, and mine too. And I hope people go and check out the website. Again, it's haykod.org. And there is, I'm sure, a space there for you to be able to donate as well if you're interested. So
yes, they can write us. They can donate. I mean, it's a fun website. I believe they will enjoy it.
And then people can also go as well and visit the shelter, too.
Of course, of course. I mean, oh, we would love to see visitors, of course, anytime.
Thanks so much.
And everybody in Toronto can know that if they ever go to Ankara, they have a home there. And they can be our guests in my mother's house. And we will do our best to show Turkish hospitality, too.
We're all smiling here. So we're very, very pleased to speak with you today, and it was great. Thank you.
Same here. Thank you so much. I'm wishing you all the success. Thank you.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. It was really wonderful to speak with her. Haven't spoken with anyone in Turkey about all the wonderful work that's being done to help animals there. So again, that was an interview with Gamzee Erkoğnur, and she's the vice president of the Animal Protection Society of Turkey. We're speaking specifically about Haykod. We're going to take a very short break, play a little station ID, maybe a little music, and then we'll come back. Hello, and welcome back to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM.
I'm on the other side of the wall here, listeners. I'm in the interview booth.
I'm sorry that we went over a little bit on your into your segment because I did want to make sure that we gave ample time to you, but I also didn't want to rush Gamzee, and I thought you wouldn't want us to rush her either.
No, it was so great. And while we were, we have the technology here, listeners, to look at the internet while there's a computer just next to the tech booth. So we were actually looking at the website while you were talking about it and looking at pictures of Ping and Pong. It's a good site. It's fun.
It is a really good site. Mm-hmm. I love that there's so many pictures.
And now that we've been invited there, it'll be where I stay when I finally go to Turkey one day in my life when I'm 49 or something like that.
That was a special show I wanted to put together for you.
Because it was awesome.
We haven't talked to people there. Mm-hmm. So.
And I'm half Turkish. If anybody's wondering why it's so special for me, it's because I'm half Turkish.
So, Lamia, it's your last program.
It's my last one. How long have I been on the radio?
I was going to ask you that. I think maybe a couple of years?
Like three.
Wow.
And I used to tech a show that used to be on the air here called Radio Oberg, and that's how I started at CIUT, and now I did Animal Voices, and now I'm leaving.
Do you have any thoughts about the show as you're departing, things that have been standing out for you as you sort of prepare to make your way away from the program?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I think I'll miss just coming here every week and doing the show. I really enjoy the technical aspect of teching, which is why I'm usually on the other side of the wall. It also is, as it is for many of our listeners too, it's a way for me to keep on the pulse of what's happening in the animal rights communities. And, I mean, one of the reasons I'm leaving is because my life has gotten so busy. So I hope that I'm still able to stay in tune with what's happening in the community, both nationally and internationally. And that is an amazing thing about this show. And I think another thing that I've really loved about this show, which I think you bring to this show a lot, and our other hosts and other contributors to the show, is the multifaceted, to use those words, aspect of the show that includes so much, including, like, makes so many connections between animal rights and other issues of oppression internationally and nationally. And I think it's so necessary for us to think that way and to be active that way as activists or as caring, compassionate people in the world. Because if we are single-issued individuals, none of this is ever going to get done if we don't make the connections with other groups and educate and listen and learn and talk and listen and learn and keep the cycle going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And in doing that, all of this is volunteer-run. Mm-hmm. And so you've been coming on your bike usually. Every week for a number of years.
Yeah.
Can you give us a sense of what it takes from your perspective to put the show together? People probably, for some people who haven't been involved with radio, they might not have a sense of what you actually do. Maybe in answering that question, you can talk about some of the challenges you face with the show or things that stand out for you, experiences. I know we throw a lot at you sometimes.
Yeah, technologically, I think it's different to be the tech rather than to be the host because other than learning initially and having the stress of being new and being thinking, oh, am I going to press the right button? Or, I just lost the person on the phone. What do I do now? I think it takes patience and calm, and it takes being able to think real quick and be real familiar with that board in there and be able to, you know, okay, we're just going to go to a song, la, 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 technical difficulty. And be able to take it when you or Rob comes in and says, okay, so we're going to talk to four people, and we're going to call four different countries.
We got better at bringing you the country codes.
Yeah, yeah.
So we used to just be like, don't you know?
We're calling Brazil. Can you call the operator in the next 10 seconds and find the country code?
One of the most challenging things, too, seems to be, or maybe this is just my perspective, but during our fundraising drives, it's a lot of work for the techs.
Yeah, but that makes it thrilling, too, or I just step up to the challenge. I think it's really fun. I think perhaps if I had 12 lives, one of them would be DJ, and I would just sit behind a tech booth and spin my records all the time and say, hey, listeners, and use my radio voice 10, 12 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. Was this a different experience than with working with Radio Oberg? You were much more, were you an on-air person more for Radio Oberg?
I came on near the end of Radio Oberg, mostly as a tech, and didn't do a lot of on-air stuff. So, definitely get thrown into it and learn how to do it. I think my second or third show that I ever teched, I was on my own, or I had never seen the board or anything. I was on my own. And it was great to be involved with that group of people. Really good information. I actually saw that email that you sent to me that Animal Voices may be speaking to the MOVE organization.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really exciting because Radio Oprah spoke to the MOVE organization too. And that's very, very exciting.
Yeah, we got a tip from Jason Rival, who we had on the program before. We were talking with him about how animals are part of the working class. He had written a number of articles, but the one we were focusing on was the article, Animals Are Part of the Working Class. And he suggested that we talk to Pam and Ramona from mm-hmm. MOVE.
They're amazing people.
Yeah, he said, you know, they were not only doing stuff around human rights, but they had tied in their analysis to animal rights as well.
And in the beginning, in the late 70s, when John Africa was still alive and he was the formationer, the leader of the MOVE organization, some of their first protests were at zoos, and some of the reason that they to protest against zoos and some of the reasons that they got targeted by the cops at that time in the early days of the civil rights, well, not early days, but in that 70s movement, one of the reasons they got targeted was because the United States is often quite racist, and because they were protesting at zoos. So their belief of life, and that life includes all life, which includes the water, the air, the earth, the animals, the humans, everything that is life, is where they started out.
Mm. And that organization has been so important to you in terms of your own personal politics and coming into mm-hmm. thinking about things in these ways.
Yeah, definitely. It formed a lot of how I think when I read 25 Years on the MOVE, which is a publication that was put out 25 years into the MOVE organization being around, I really found that a lot of what John Africa talked about resonated with me, and that one of the sentences that stands out for me so much is the power of truth is final. And that stands out for me so much because there is no denying what we know is true, and that feeling that we feel inside of ourselves when we see, when we witness, when we commit injustice, it's something that we can't deny. It's all in us. And that is so powerful for me, and was so powerful when I was doing organizing with Friends of MOVE Toronto in Toronto and with Radio Oberg. And I went down to Philadelphia a couple times and met members of the MOVE organization. It is amazing, moving.
We have a couple of clips. I'm going to get you to choose which one you want to hear. We have a clip from Sister Vegan where she talks about the connection she sees between the liberation struggles, human liberation struggles she's been involved with in the animal movements. We also have a clip from Keith McHenry Show. He's one of the founders of Food Not Bombs. And I like this clip because he talks about the connections that Food Not Bombs made with animals right away. But there's also a section where you ask a question to him about how he takes care of himself, because that's really been something that we've talked a lot about on this program, about how do you sort of take care of yourself as an activist as well. The final clip is one that from a show that Xanthrotect, and it was about kids and veganism. And so it's up to you.
I say Keith McHenry.
Okay, let's go with the Keith McHenry.
Can you do that, Carl? Carl's the new tech, everyone. He's doing great.
Hello, it's me.
It's funny to look at him from behind the booth over here.
We'll come back and talk more with Lami after this clip. I know that people listening who maybe are new to Food Not Bombs, who are regular listeners of Animal Voices, might be thinking, this is all very interesting, but why would you have him on an Animal Voices program? And I mean, I see lots of connections here, but I was wondering if you could pull some out for us. I know that, I mean, for me, the animal movements, a lot of them, different segments anyway, have been pushing for a long time a non-violent agenda. And Food Not Bombs has also been serving vegetarian food right from the beginning. And during our phone call conversation a few days ago, we were talking about how Food Not Bombs was inspired by books like Diet for a Small Planet. Could you talk about why vegetarian food with Food Not Bombs? I know there's a couple of different reasons why.
Yeah, there are actually, one of the things early on when we were starting Food Not Bombs is we wanted to show by our way of living and every aspect of Food Not Bombs our political point of view. And since we were for peace and nonviolent, we couldn't really get behind the idea of violence against animals. And actually, if you read in our On Conflict and Consensus and in the Food Not Bombs book, we actually, there's some of the people in there are not people, but they're actually our dogs, although we give them as much credit as for what happened as the people. So we wanted to show that animals should have the same rights as humans, that We wanted to show that we were nonviolent. We also wanted to, being unhealthy towards your own self is a form of violence. And we also wanted to show that to save the environment, we need to change our way of eating. Because so much land is destroyed by factory farming, by the beef and pig and chicken industry. You know, rivers and streams are horribly polluted. And just the whole promotion of violence in the society, the whole, really, even if you're not the actual person slaughtering the animals, the kind of whole energy of dominating other species, brutally killing them by the thousands, and then thinking that somehow this is, a healthy way to be organizing society and to be eating, were all issues we wanted to address. Also, we actually, before people were writing about veganism, our recipes in the Food Not Bombs book and the food that we generally gave out was vegan, even though we really didn't think of it in that way at the beginning. So just the exploitation of animals, and we thought, well, that's not right to be exploiting animals when we're also organizing to end the exploitation of people. And then the other issue that is really important is that you can safely recover vegetarian food and give it out without worrying about poisoning people. Even if you agree with the idea of eating meat, it's much, much safer to be giving away vegetarian food. The need for refrigeration and steam tables, all of those issues vanish as a result of focusing on a vegetarian diet. So it makes it so that people without any resources at all, with very, very little money, any person basically, can organize a Food Not Bombs group, and they don't need to buy refrigerators and trucks necessarily or steam tables to be able to do it. And so all of those issues were linked. And just to have a peaceful, nonviolent future, we wanted every aspect of what we were doing to reflect that the ideology of peace and good health and being positive. And I think that we were in 1980, many people weren't vegetarian or had not experienced any vegetarian food. And by stopping at the Food Not Bombs table and eating with us, they were able to discover that, sure enough, you could live on a vegetarian diet, and the food was tasty, and it was a really positive thing.
Keith, I'm just going to interrupt you there for a minute. I wanted to make sure that Lamia, who is our tech and also, I guess, sort of a part-time co-host as well on the show, gets to ask a question.
Okay, great.
I wanted to ask you, Keith, what do you do for yourself to keep yourself healthy? Or what do you, obviously some of the things you mentioned would keep you healthy, like good intentions and good food, etc. But to be able to be involved with Food Not Bombs and in social justice for over 2 decades since you were in sixth grade, what do you do for yourself?
Well, my big thing is I'm very into this thing called aqua aerobics. So I'm a member of the YMCA. So I do the swimming and the kind of exercise in the water, the slow impact. But I do have very serious health challenges in that I have, from these beatings and so on, I've ended up with fibromyalgia. So I struggle with that all the time. And so I am always working on having my diet be fine-tuned so that I don't have things like wheat or things like that might inflame my nervous system. And one of the reasons I live in Tucson is because the hiking and everything here is really fantastic. And I ride my mountain bike, which I love. And so there's those kinds of things. But I do think also, like you were implying, that being excited about what I'm doing, that really makes it possible to maintain good health. Because it's just, just so rewarding doing Food Not Bombs. And it's a testament of, you feel like you're really having an impact on it.
That's an interview we did with Keith McHenry. He's one of the co-founders of Food Not Bombs. Lamia was asking a question about health. We only have a minute left.
That's it.
thanks for being part of the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me for years.
Yeah, it's been awesome to have you here, and we've gone for so many lunches afterwards, and there's just so much, there's a lot of thought and energy and love that goes into the show, and we've really shared it over the past few years, so thanks.
It's been beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm getting choked up, so I'm going to get off the air. You've been listening to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5. Thanks a lot, Mia.